RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need. From athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Outdoor Edge knows that providing a freezer full of meat is part of the reason we all hunt. And what better way to bring it full circle than to process your own wild game? Outdoor Edge provides a full lineup of traditional and replaceable blade hunting knives and complete wild game processing kits to bring your wild game from the field to the freezer. Visit OutdoorEdge.com and at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30 for 30% off. Here we go again. Another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast is in progress. I really appreciate each and every one of you for taking time out of your day to listen. Today, we're going to be talking with Josh Stubbs of Elevate Stand Company. And these guys have recently, I think as recent as December, decided they wanted to hop into the hang on tree stand, I guess the hang on tree stand market, and they're coming out with a brand new stand. Now, this show, the birth of this particular episode is because of some comments that were made in another episode, And Josh wanted to come on and kind of clear the air about the functionality and the design of the tree stand. And that's what we get into today. We talk about their laser cutting manufacturing process. We talk about their design, which is very unique compared to other hang-on stands. We talk about the introduction into the market, as a whole, and just a lot of other BS revolving hang-on tree stands and their particular products and where he feels are going to be in that next year to two-year time frame and beyond. So this is a really cool episode. Lots of information about the company, and I think you guys are going to like it. It's just another option for the mobile guy. And Josh is gonna pitch his company on this episode, talk about the information, and we get it straight from the horse's mouth. So that's always a plus as well. Now, before we get into today's episode, we're gonna do a commercial break here. If you haven't visited the Average Conservationist website yet, theaverageconservationist.com. I know that's a long title, but go check out their apparel line. It's badass. They have a variety of logo tees. It's a lifestyle brand, hoodies, hats, and some other things with their artwork and their logos on it. I'm telling you right now, it's a really cool lifestyle brand. I love their t-shirts. I love their hoodies. And one thing I really like about their t-shirts is I call them the love handle shirts, because they're tight around the shoulders and chest in the spots that make you look good, but not tight in the other places like the love handles. And I don't know, I just love the fit and I love the brand. On top of that, they are giving 10% of all their profits to some form of conservation effort right off the top. So if you want to find out more about the brand, visit theaverageconservationist.com and check out their podcast on the Sportsman's Nation Network here. Next is Novex, so you can go to novexoutdoors.com and check out their lineup of tree stands. They're very similar to the Lone Wolf tree stands. That brand has gone bye-bye. Again, I'm trying to work on Novex to come on the podcast and talk a little bit about the brand and the products that they offer. Very similar, same exact functionality as the Lone Wolf's of days before. And that's why I love it. It is the functionality that I love. Easy to set up, easy to tear down, easy to be mobile, and made in America products, which doesn't hurt. So head on over to their website. And then lastly, Hunt Stand. I've already been out doing a very short scout session and checking some trail cameras from, since the rut. I've left them up since the rut, and I'm going to go take them. I've taken a couple of them down, and I've done some scouting. And with Hunt Stand, what I'm doing is I am documenting just about everything I see, right? So the more dots on a graph that you see, and this is like statistics 101, the more information that you're going to be able to have to forecast whatever you're trying to accomplish, right? So if I document rubs and scrapes and sightings and terrain features and trail camera images and satellite imagery, and I can put all that information on a map, and then I can look at the map and I can say, well, I don't need to worry about this spot right here because deer don't go here, or there's a high concentration of deer movement in this funnel or this pinch point or this travel corridor or bedding area or staging area or food source or whatever, right? And that information allows you to make more educated decisions on where you're going to place your tree stands, thus helping you in the long run become more efficient and successful hunter. And I know that's crazy that you can learn all that from a mapping application, but that's exactly how it's designed to be used, right? And they have a variety of different maps. You can look at satellite imagery that's updated monthly, and topography, along with a whole bunch of other maps and really cool functionality. It's only $30 for an entire year. So if you want to find out more information about Hunt Stand, visit huntstand.com. Commercials are done. Now let's get into today's tree stand episode with Josh Stubbs. All right, on the phone with me today, Mr. Josh Stubbs of Elevate Stand Company. How we doing, man?
We're good. Really good.
Good, man. Good. a whole bunch of stuff to talk about today with your brand new company. We're going to get into all of the meat and potatoes of that here in just a moment. But I take it that if you are bringing a tree stand to the market, you yourself are a deer hunter. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So how did your season go this year?
Well, it started off really awesome. I went to Colorado on an elk hunt, did not kill an elk there, but came back. And when I got home, and we live in, South Central Kansas, I had about 300 pictures of a bull elk on my camera.
Really?
On one of my cams. Yeah. And he had been coming into a pond that I put in one of my pastures. I think I built that like 3-4 years ago, and had 300 pictures of him. I mean, he was using it kind of as a wallow. It's not a real big pond. But the whole time I was in Colorado, he was pretty much there. And when I checked, by the time I checked the camera, he hadn't been there for 3 days. And so I'm like, you know, what are the chances of him coming back? Probably very slim. I've never personally seen an elk in Kansas, and I've lived there my entire life. And so I went, but I went and got a tag that night because I'm like, okay, yeah, there's not a good chance he's going to come back. But if he does come back, you know, I want to be able to take him. So I hunted for roughly the next 3 weeks as much as I could in the evening. I think I don't know, 9 or 10 sits in that 2.5-3 weeks. And October 5th, he came in that evening about 20-25 minutes before legal time ended. And I was turned around looking at a soybean field because I was also hunting whitetails at the same time.
Yeah.
Our season opens up, you know, middle of September. And there was a specific buck I wanted to kill, and I was hoping he would slip up in September and come in early. Because it's, you know, at that, for in Kansas, we're still, you know, can be in the 80s to 90s. Yeah. So a lot of hot days in September. And I'm looking at that soybean field, and then I turn around, and that bull elk is standing 31 yards away. And I about fall out of the tree stand, and it happened to, I was using one of our prototypes, one of our first prototypes that we had made, and that bull elk almost immediately walked into 21 yards. I had some minerals out, and he proceeded to stand there for the next 6-7 minutes, and he was perfectly, you know, right on line. He was facing me.
Yeah.
I didn't really, if I'd have been on the ground, I probably would have tried that shot, but I was, you know, 15 feet up in the air and had a couple smaller bucks coming in, making their way to the pond. I'm like, okay, he's going to turn around at some point and he's going to look at them. And sure enough, he did. He opened up that shoulder and I stuck it right in there. And it was a heart shot. He maybe went 50-60 yards. I filmed it all. There's a video on YouTube. If you look up Elevate Stand Co, you'll see that bull elk video. But, he had already fallen over by the time I got my camera off the camera arm. So he died pretty quick. And then, so that was off to a great start. But I was chasing one particular buck, for the entire year, and he was pretty much a ghost. He did come by my stand, but it was like 5 minutes after legal. And I mean, he was standing right there. I mean, it was full moon. I could see him perfectly. But obviously legal time had passed, so didn't take the shot. And I saw him a couple other times, but he moved at night. He moved very, very little during the day, and I could just never catch up with him. And
yeah.
Towards the end of the season, I don't know if he got killed during our rifle season, because after rifle season, I didn't see him. And some, he's disappeared over the past several years that I've been hunting him. And my brother, you know, was hunting him as well. So maybe he'll show up next year, but I don't know.
Yeah.
And by that time, I was just hunting to see if I could see him. So I wasn't really pursuing any other deer. So,
yeah.
But that's what happens, you know, when you chase a particular whitetail.
That's a fact.
Especially, you know, the ones that are up in the 180s, 190s.
Yeah.
Those guys are big for a reason. It's because they tend to stay away from people a lot. So,
yeah. When I think of central, you said South Central Kansas, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So when I hear South Central Kansas, I don't think about elk hunting. Is this a rare occasion for elk to be on your property, or is this a random thing? And how, like, cause typically let's say an elk shows up in Iowa. I don't think you can get a tag to shoot it.
Right. Yep. Well, I guess the thing about Kansas, you know, we border Colorado, and I think we're around 200 miles from I'd have to, you know, Google it, but I think where we live, we're around 200 miles from the Colorado border. And from what we can tell, a buddy of mine had talked to a fish and game guy from the feds. He's a federal game warden, and he said that 4 years ago, when there were big wildfires in Colorado, that there was a herd of about 60 that followed one of the rivers into Kansas, and they lost track of a lot of them somewhere west of us, about 30 miles.
Huh.
But yeah, it is pretty rare. Like I said, I've never seen one my entire life. My dad, who's 73, has never seen an elk in Kansas. So it is very rare. We do have a herd on Fort Riley, but it's a once in a lifetime draw. So if I draw on that for that Army base elk tag, I never get to, it's just, you know, once in a lifetime.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure if non-residents can apply for that.
Yeah.
Never really looked into that one, but they kill, you know, they kill elk on that every year, but it doesn't appear that that's where he came from.
Yeah. That's crazy, so, man. Even in Iowa here, we have like a rare occasion where even in Southern Iowa, this was like 15 or even 20, 25, probably closer to 25 years ago. It was all over. It was talk of the town. There was a moose. There was actually a bull moose with a small antlers, in Southern Iowa, made his way down from wherever he was at, and probably Minnesota or something like that, and bull moose. And then, you know, we've had black bear show up in Iowa, which is another kind of rarity, which seems like every year it's more and more black bear, but it's crazy how every once in a while you'll see something, or something will make its way through that never, you know, typically doesn't make it through.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely God blessing me for sure, because I don't know where he was hanging out all summer. I talked to a lot of the farmers around, and they had never seen him. And then to have him, you know, disappear for almost 3 weeks and then show up that night. I mean, it was.
Yeah, that's nuts, man. So you shot an elk in Kansas.
Yes. Yeah. And that was actually my first elk. I've been going out to Colorado the last 4 years and archery. And I've been close, just not, you know, the wind would always swirl and send the bulls running, or just couldn't quite get close enough to them. So I never thought my first elk would be in Kansas. But I did apply. My buddy and I applied for, we had like 9 preference points in Wyoming. And so I think we're going to finally draw for this fall. So we'll be going out there. But yeah, I never would have guessed my first elk was in was in Kansas.
Yeah, that's nuts, man. Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. Let's talk about Elevate here. You know, you guys are a brand new company. You mentioned that you started the business in December of this year, and obviously, before that time frame, you don't just start a business and have product. You know, there's a whole bunch of things that happen leading up to it. So, like, with the market, the hang on market, the way it is, right? There's a lot of hang ons in this industry. Yep. What was your guys' thought process of, hey, let's start a hang on tree stand company given the market?
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, the original idea probably started when I first started deer hunting, which would have been 25 years ago. I grew up on a farm, and my grandpa was a huge duck hunter, and I would go duck hunting. I went to a private school, and so I would go duck hunting with him every chance I got. The school I went to, you could work ahead. It was kind of a at your pace type deal. So if you were far enough ahead, you could take a morning off, or you could take an afternoon off, and you could, you know, take a couple days off if you wanted to, as long as you were getting your work done. And so I duck hunted a ton, and then got my first job out of college, and the company was Alcoa, the big aluminum company, and it was the part of their aerospace division here in Kansas. And I just started meeting guys that not only liked to hunt, but they also liked to deer hunt. And so I started rifle hunting, quickly grew tired of that and switched over to bow. But, you know, you start getting introduced to tree stands, and then, you know, I would be playing around with tree stands and kind of modifying things here and things there. And then, you know, a couple of years doing that. And then just kind of tabled the idea, but I always wanted to be involved in a hunting type company. And so spent 14 years in aerospace, and then been running a steel fabrication company for the last 11 years. And so, you know, as you look at the market, for me personally, obviously, you know, there's a lot of choices out there, and there's a lot of good companies, and they make quality products. And I like to move around. I like to take tree stands out to Colorado, because you can hunt elk, you know, from a tree stand over a water hole, or even here in Kansas, obviously, for whitetail. And so for me, it was, and I was I was a pro staff on a couple companies, and I didn't have a tree stand that I liked everything about it. And so that's kind of what started the idea back up. And then 2020 hits, supply chain gets hammered. A lot of the companies that do bring in product from China, you know, you couldn't find any tree stands out there. And so that's really when the idea kind of took off even further. It was like, you know, we could do this, and I think that we can make a quality product, and we'll keep everything in house, and we'll be able to keep the price point lower.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the main reasons that I think that we ultimately will be successful. One is, you know, we're putting out a quality product, but also, and it's all made in the US. But the other is the price point.
Yeah.
That as you look at some of the upper end stands, they do come with a cost. And so we're trying to, you know, beat those prices while still putting out a quality stand.
Gotcha. All right. So, you know, you had hunted out of a hang on, and you said there were certain things that you didn't like about some of the other tree stands that you that you had or that you were using. What were some of the things that you didn't like about those tree stands that you kind of covered in, you know, or brought to the table with this first hang on?
Right. Well, I'll answer that question by basically telling you or explaining to you what our tree stand does. And that might be able to answer your question. If not, we'll go back through it. But when we designed this platform, obviously we wanted it as light as possible. But there is a point where when you start going ultra light, things start to flex. and they're not as rigid as maybe something that I personally would like.
Yeah.
So when you look at the platform and you look at our design, the thick rib around the outside edge, and that it also, there's a thick rib that kind of looks like a V.
Yep. I'm looking at it.
So that's where the majority of the strength comes from.
And that goes all the way to the back of the tree stand, almost like a Y. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
That's right. That's right. And for the record, I mean, we did send it off to get third party tested. Our weight rating is 300 pounds. So that means that they tested it at 600 pounds. Now that does not mean a 600 pound person should use the tree stand. That's I'm just giving, you know, the listeners, an explanation for how weight ratings are determined and decided.
I don't know many 600 pound, guys or gals getting 15 feet in the air.
I just felt like I needed to say that,
right.
But you're right. They're right. Probably hunting from the ground.
Right.
But so that's all engineered, how it's laid out there. And then obviously, you know, there's ribs and stuff like that. I know there was, you know, maybe some comments about, well, the holes look big, and from the eye, they probably do, but I sent you that picture of a size 10 boot.
Yeah.
I used this stand all season long, probably put about 80 sits in it, and I personally did not have any problem. I don't have large feet, so, you know, a lot of guys out there that have 12, 13, you know, size feet, they're going to be fine, yeah. No problem.
And I will say this, looking at that stand, and maybe it's just the way some of these pictures are taken, there are angles where the gapping between the ribs looks bigger. Now, the picture that I'm looking at right now is the picture on the very first picture on your tree stand or on your website. And
on the website.
Yeah. And the holing or the spacing of there doesn't look as big as some of the other pictures that I've seen.
Right. Right.
So,
yeah.
So there's that.
And the angle of the, you know, whether it's taking a picture with a drone or a camera.
Yeah.
The angles can definitely be deceiving.
For sure.
But we wanted the holes to be as large as we thought possible, obviously to keep weight down.
Right.
So the other aspect of our stand is it's a two-post system, and most of the lightweight stands that I've seen on the market are a single post system.
Explain what you mean by that.
Okay. So, those are actually two pieces of aluminum that got cut out, and then we attach them with the bracket that holds the straps.
Okay.
So those are, so it would actually be two pieces that are 3/8 of an inch thick that then get mated together. It gets tied in with the tree bracket. It gets tied in with the seat. Then the two brackets that hold the straps. And then it also gets tied in at the base, you know, where it hinges.
Right. Okay. So it's almost like, instead, if we're going to compare that to a bow, right? It's a single,
yeah.
It's a single riser and not a double riser.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You could probably say that, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And the reason that we did that was and this is obviously, you know, personal opinion, but we feel that it makes that upright more rigid, that when you just have a single piece and when, you know, you're cinching it to a tree, sometimes that can flex and can torque. And so a two-post system, we feel, handles that better.
Okay. So when I listen to you say that, and I'm looking at some of the pictures, it's supposed to remove the flexibility to get a better grip on the tree, right? But does that then cause the platform itself or the seat itself to become off center of each other?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
Because we've got, and I'm, you know, everybody has this, trees that are crooked, you know, where they hunt.
Yeah.
We were just at the Pennsylvania show. Now they have a lot of straight trees from what I could see, but I'm sure they still have, you know, crooked trees out there. I hang these in crooked trees all the time. I know that was another thing that was said, that, that you don't have any left to right adjustment. Now you can't change anything on the tree stand itself, but I hunted with a single point of contact up top all year long.
Okay.
We have mulberry trees. We have hedge trees. The straightest trees are young cottonwood trees, but they're, you know, they're just not very big. But like I said, I hunted where the tree was maybe veering off to the left, and I was still using these tree stands in those trees.
Gotcha. So as far as an adjustment is concerned, right? Because there's a lot of hang-ons on the market where it's only going to work in a straight tree.
Right.
Right? So, right. So you're saying that not only does your tree stand can be adjusted, the platform can be adjusted for a leaning forward, leaning back setup, but it can also be adjusted on a right and left, correct?
Well, not the tree stand itself. I mean, that bolt that goes through there is set. What I'm saying is that, like, the tree bracket that attaches to the tree up top, or that touches the tree on the top of the stand.
Yeah.
That you can use it with a single point of contact.
Right, right. Which would allow the leveling of right and left is what I'm. So if the tree is leaning one way or the other, you can have that single point of contact that will allow you to when you're in the tree stand, you're not leaning over. You're one way or the other. Right. Okay. Good. Yep. All right, cool. So that's a benefit. Right.
Yes.
So all of these things that may have been mentioned in one of the previous episodes, you know, we're getting those questions answered right now. Now, what about the manufacturing side of it? Is this a water jetted stand, or is this a cast aluminum stand?
It is neither.
It is neither. Okay. Here we go.
Nope. It's neither.
Okay.
We use a laser.
Okay.
So that's how we do it. Everything is cut with a fiber laser, and then our holes are, you know, precision holes on like what you would find in a tool die shop.
Gotcha. So is it punched, or is it? So it's laser cut. The whole thing's laser cut.
Yeah. So the platform is half inch thick aluminum, 6061 T6. And so the laser cuts all those pieces out, the same with the pieces of 3/8 inch material.
Gotcha.
And then the seat as well. And then we drill the holes that need to be drilled.
Gotcha. Okay. And the comment here, or the, on your website, 100% of its main components are made and manufactured in the United States. So we're talking even the cables, the screws, the straps, all that stuff.
Yep. Cool. Yep. So we have a company out of Oregon that makes our straps. It was really hard to find a company in the U.S. and maybe that was just because we couldn't find them with our search engines. But we finally found a company in Oregon that made all the straps, the cam buckles, the ratchet straps. The cables are made by Fastenal, which is made up in Kansas City. The seats come from a company in Wichita, Kansas. So, and then we make the aluminum components in-house.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. All right. So as far as the, that's the stand is concerned with the adjustments. Now I want to talk a little bit about, I want you to break down how this thing actually straps to the tree, because we have a very unique system of how, because there's no, you know, in the lone wolves of the world, and some of the XOPs of the world, there's I guess they call it a Versa button, right? That everything straps to. You have a hook system, like a reverse hook system on here, explain how that works, and then talk a little bit about, because one thing, and I'm talking from a mobile guy, you're up, you're standing on a set of sticks, you're strapped to the tree in your lineman's belt, and you're trying to basically one hand hold the tree to the, you know, one hand hold the tree to the tree or the stand to the tree,
yep,
while you're reaching around the tree to kind of throw the strap into your other hand. So then you can switch hands and bring it around and ratchet it down. It's one of the most difficult parts of hanging a tree stand. If you're going to ask me, if you ask me,
right.
So talk a little bit about the strapping system and how it works.
Yeah. So with a two post system, you have to have a way to connect it together.
Right.
And part of what makes that the upright on the stand so rigid is those two brackets that hold it. So we drill and tap holes into those uprights, and then the screws go through the brackets. I think I sent you a couple pictures that should show that pretty clear. And so it's like at that point, the bracket becomes, you know, what you will attach the straps to.
Yeah.
I have the Versa button. Obviously there's a lot of companies that use it. It's a great tool. But sometimes and this is once again, personal opinion. When you're putting a loop on that Versa button and you're trying to cinch it down, it can, or, you know, like you said, when you're up in a tree, you're sitting back on your safety harness with your, you know, linesman belt, that tree stand, when you're starting to cinch it down, it can kind of, depending on which way you're going, it can either pull to the left or kind of pull to the right.
Exactly.
Ours seems to do that a little less. It seems to pull it, you know, more straight back. And so I personally like, you know, our design and how it attaches to the tree. But what you do is you put one loop. What I generally do is I put one loop around, you know, that hook before I get up into the tree. So when I'm pulling that tree stand, there's already that hook on it. And then, you know, I place it up against the tree and then throw the, either the ratchet strap or the cam buckle. That's the one that's getting, you know, thrown around the tree just so there's some weight. And obviously yeah, it depends on, you know, if you've got a 10-inch tree you're in, then it's no problem. But if you've got a little bit bigger tree, then you might need some of that weight on the end to throw it around so you can catch it.
Yeah.
And then you can cam ours in just like everybody else's. And so that's how we set it.
Yeah. And a lot of that pulling left and right can, like, the more you use that, whether it's your system or another system, you can learn to not have that happen, right? It's all about where the gap in the strap is. And once you learn how to adjust that, then there is no more pull left and right. So, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, that's unique, man. That's pretty cool. When you came up with the initial idea of this, were there any type of patents or, what's that called? Not necessarily patents.
Well, you're probably talking about a patent.
Yeah, patent that you had to work around in order to get this thing to come to life.
No, I mean, and we did extensive research on patents, and we couldn't find anything on two post systems, and so that left it pretty wide open. The ones that are out there. And there's tons of patents out there, and it's hard to find them all because of the way the patent system up. The searching for patents just is not very easy. But that, you know, no one has ever done, you know, the two post system with those two hooks that go together, and that's how it attaches to the tree. So from what we have seen, you know, the patents really didn't affect us.
Gotcha. All right. So there wasn't really anything that, you know, because there's sometimes where an idea happens and you go, holy cow, yep. I want to do this. The prototype, you make the prototype, and then you realize, well, man, a whole bunch of other people or maybe one other person has done this. We can never sell it this way. Then they have to go back to the drawing board and either come up with a completely idea or tweak something. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I will tell you that we did originally started with a one post design, and then we just did not like the way that was coming together. And so we switched over to the two post design.
Gotcha.
So that obviously cleared up a lot. We felt like, yeah. By going to that two post design, because we couldn't find anybody else out there that had made anything close to that. So.
Gotcha. Let's talk about a little bit about the specs. Okay. Yep. Let's talk about how much does it weigh? The platform size are the two kind of biggest things that I would be interested in.
Yep. Yep. So, the stand weighs 10 pounds, 6 ounces, and that's for what we would consider a full size stand.
Okay.
Obviously there's stands out there that weigh less than ours. They're also smaller. We had to start somewhere. We didn't want to wait another year to bring out the stand till we had everything else done that we want to. So we will be making a smaller size stand that will weigh less. But this one weighs 10 pounds, 6 ounces. The seat is 12 by 10 and a half. And hopefully if you know, at the Iowa Deer Classic, you can come and sit in it, but it's very, very comfortable. The base is 29 by 18.75.
Gotcha.
And how our stand is made, and one of the reasons we went with a bigger platform, because that would have, you know, obviously shaved off, you know, maybe not a full pound, but it would have shaved off some significant weight.
Yeah.
Is when you're sitting in that stand, the legs come down, your legs come down, and your feet are not, you don't have to tuck your feet underneath the seat.
Yeah.
Your legs come down and they're straight. You know, you got a 45 degree angle on, you know, between your top of your legs and your feet. So, that was one of the things that we wanted in our stand, people to be able to, you know, be comfortable in them and have plenty of room. So those are pretty much the spec. The top to bottom, from the base, top of the base to the top of the seat is 19 and a half inches. So, you know, it covers a wide range of people. We had a guy come by a stand in Pennsylvania, and he was like 6'5", probably 260, and he loved the stand. So
yeah, that's awesome.
And I'm 5'10", 185, so that just gives you some comparison difference.
Yeah, I was 185 in fourth grade, I think. So, so okay, we have the, you know, there no patents. The design is unique, and so as you start to bring this to market, right? You've had it at some trade shows. Yep. You mentioned just now that you've seen, you know, you've had guys your size and guys 6'5" or whatever in it, big dogs like that. What are people's initial responses to your product? Like, maybe talk a little bit about the good. If you want to talk about the bad, say that, but then how you rebuttal that.
Yeah. So, well, the good, would be that it was a lot more rigid than they expected. That it was more comfortable, that the seat was very comfortable. The distance from the platform to the seat was just about right for, you know, the majority of the people. And then it's amazing, even in this day and age, how many people, don't know of aluminum stands. Like, I couldn't even count how many people came by and they expected it to weigh 20 or 30 pounds because, you know, that's what a steel stand weighs. And then they would pick it up and they just couldn't believe that it was only 10 pounds, but they could feel it. So that was probably one of my biggest surprises. It's like, man, there's a lot of, you know, lightweight or lighter weight stands out there. And so that was a big takeaway, that there's still a big segment of the hunting population that just, you know, doesn't even know how light, you know, stands can be. So,
right. And that's crazy because, there are, you nailed it right there. I mean, it's always funny talking to someone who has been a ladder stand guy for their whole life or has been a, you know, like they go in the summer, they put up the sticks that you have to ratchet strap to the trees or a ladder that you have to ratchet strap to get to a hang on that is ratchet strapped to the tree. And there's no mobility in that type of setup, right? Obviously they put it there and that's where it stays. Right. So, it is cool to see that reaction when like I show, for example, I'll show my stepdad or I'll show some of my older family members, like here's my four sticks and this is what I take into the tree stand and I set up and I tear down every single time. They're like, are you crazy?
Right.
Then they pick it up and they're like, oh, okay. That's not so bad.
Yeah. Makes sense after they pick it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
So the initial reaction's been pretty good then.
Yeah. The biggest asked question was, when are we coming out with sticks?
Yeah.
And obviously I know, I mean, I do it myself. You're a mobile hunter. You've got to have the sticks that complement the stand.
Right.
And we are working on that. It's still in engineering. It's still in prototypes. We're not ready to release it. But sticks are coming.
Gotcha.
And we knew that going in, but once again, it was like, okay, our stand's ready. We can at least get our name out there. We can start meeting people. They can at least, you know, get introduced to us so that when our sticks do come out, that we already have, you know, a customer base that we can draw from. But I can promise everyone that the sticks will attach to the platform. They will integrate. We are working on with a company, a backpack that would be able to, attach to the platform. And so you'd be able to carry it in. You wouldn't have to have, you know, two straps. You would have, you know, just the straps from your backpack and it would be able to, you know, it'd be big enough to carry all of your stuff. But back to the biggest thing that people were asking for was when our sticks are going to come out. So we're hoping in another month and a half, that we'll be able to announce something. We're just not quite there yet.
Right. So this, you guys seem to be falling into the trend of what's going on in the tree stand market, right? So like Timber Ninja, they come out, they have their lineup and now they're getting in there. They're going to get a backpack and they have a stand. Or excuse me, a saddle that's coming out. It seems like you guys are getting into the sticks now. You're going to be getting into the backpack. Are there any hints or ideas rolling around about a saddle in your guys' heads?
I don't know if we want to get into the saddle itself, but we had a bunch of people ask us about saddle platforms. And so that is something definitely on the table. We're also, you know, looking at, cause we also had a lot of guys were like, hey, we love this stand. Can you make it smaller? And we're like, you know, we're working on it. We're just not done with the prototype. So there's a lot in the works for us. Obviously it will still all be made in the US and it will be consumer direct for the most part. So, you know, to keep costs down. But yeah, all that is on the table. So,
yeah. Okay.
I'm not a saddle hunter. I like the tree stands. But I definitely see how it can be advantageous in certain situations. And, you know, for some guys that's how they hunt 100% of the time. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Obviously it's a growing trend. So if we can be of benefit to that trend, we definitely will.
Gotcha. All right. Now let's talk about this. It's the price point. Okay. So online 460 is, $459.99, 460 is what the stand cost. You know, I think the beast stand, some of the hunting, the Lone Wolf custom gear stand is one of their stands is up there too in price. So it really is, the Timber Ninja stand is going to be pretty expensive. I mean, that's double with that carbon fiber one, but, that pretty much segments out a big majority of people, right? So when you come to market with a tree stand that is $460, it's much higher than an XOP or much higher than a Lone Wolf, and some of the other comparable stands on the market. A lot of people look at that and they go, I'm out. They don't even care what the functionality of the tree stand is. They don't care that it's made in America. They look at it and they go, I'm out, just because of price. What is, like, how would you respond to me talking about the price point and maybe potentially talk about who your demographic is that you see buying this stand?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that I would want you to do is to pick it up. I would want to show you the adjustments that you can make. We had a lot of people, we would tell them the price and they're like, oh man, that's really expensive. And it is, I mean, $460. I mean, that's a good amount of money. But then we talk about the engineering behind it. We talk about that it's made in the US.
Yeah.
And then when they actually feel it is another big selling point for them. But then when they actually sit in it, that's kind of when we saw, minds getting changed on the price point. And then they actually look at the stand up close, because it is precision made. You're not talking about, huge tolerances. They're very small tolerances on the holes and the hole placement. And, it's a fiber laser. So, those things are dead on. So when you get past that, that's when they kind of start seeing, okay, absolutely, this price point is not that bad for what you're getting. That and the fact when you talk about material pricing and what aluminum did, and even steel. Steel in last year, I mean, it got all the way up to $2,000 a ton. And that's a huge increase from where it was, because back in 2020, I think it was around $450. And this is, we're just talking hot rolled steel, nothing special. And then what aluminum did, I mean, every time we would call in, okay, we need another piece because we want to run another prototype. The price just on aluminum just kept going up and up and up. So when you talk about all of that, then that price point, it doesn't seem to scare them off as much. So
yeah,
that's what I would say is feel it, pick it up, see how it attaches to the tree, and then actually sit in it.
And you guys are direct to consumer, right?
That's right.
Right.
That's right. We may be working with a couple archery shops, but for the most part, I really would like to stay away from the big box stores.
Yeah.
I'd like to stay closer to the customer.
Yeah.
And the price point stays lower.
Exactly.
If we're consumer direct.
Exactly.
Obviously, if you're selling to somebody else and they got to make their money selling it to someone else, then obviously price just shoots up. And I just would rather not do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny when I go into like a Bass Pro Shop and I look at items, I go, man, and knowing what I know about manufacturing and retail supply chain, right? You look at a product and you go, oh man, that's real expensive. But it's, if you take out that big box store out of the equation, and if a customer did sell something direct, it would be probably half of that. right? Yep. You know, a lot of these bigger companies are wanting 50 points as far as margin is concerned. And it just makes things, your tree stand would go to $1,000 in a heartbeat, right?
That's just not something I'm willing to do.
Exactly.
Nor want to do.
Yeah.
I remember when I was 21, fresh out of college, and I was trying to get into deer hunting, and, you know, I couldn't afford a lot. And so I know, you know, what money means to people. And so that was the main reason why we're not going to go into those big box stores. We'll just stay consumer direct. Maybe a couple select archery shops. But for the most part, we want to be in connection with that customer.
Yeah. All right. You mentioned sticks, are going to be coming a different size of tree stand potentially here in the future. Where do you guys see yourself in maybe 5 to 10 years, and what kind of products complement your vision in 5 to 10 years?
Oh man. You know, I don't even know if we've had time to talk about 10 years. We're focused right now on the smaller tree stand, a platform, a camera arm, and then obviously the sticks. But we'll probably get it. There's, you know, a lot of product that's made in China and companies bring it back. And our main goal in this company is to produce American made product that they can get it. You know, we can't compete on everything. I mean, that's why people go to China, is because it's hard to compete on price. But that's our main goal, is to get this line out there for everybody. All those products that I just talked about, and then start looking at other opportunities to maybe we can start bringing back stuff that was made in China. Maybe we're private labeling for other companies, 'cause we can do that. But that's our main goal right now.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yep. So then I guess we've kind of run the floor here today. If there's a guy out there, he hears it, and let's just say Made in America. First off, I want to say that, you know, making your product in America is very admirable. It's something that I look at a lot when I'm going to purchase anything, whether it's something for my house or office to, you know, a tree stand, you know, some things you can win at, some things you can't win at, but I think that's very admirable. So there's a guy out there, he hears this and he's going to start researching hang on tree stands, whether he's mobile, whether he's not mobile, whatever. Why should he take a hard look at Elevate?
Well, first I'm going to say is that we're going to be around for a long time. But the second reason is he's going to have direct interaction with myself or my brother. We do it all day long, whether it's on Instagram, Facebook. I've given out my cell phone to numerous people. If you got any issues, we're going to stand 100% behind the product that we make, and just give us a chance. But the biggest selling point is if they can actually get in a stand and feel it. So the shows that we're going to be doing the Iowa Deer Classic. We're going to be doing a sportsman show in Olathe, Kansas. We're going to be doing the Illinois Deer Classic. So if there's anybody that's listening that is going to go to any of those shows, please come by our booth. We're going to have the stand set up to where you can get in it, feel it, sit on it. So
perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Well, Josh, man, good luck with everything. Hopefully the momentum keeps rolling in your guys' favor, and you keep spreading the word about the pod or the product, and the tree stand takes off, man. So I really appreciate you taking time out of your day. Good luck with everything, and maybe I'll see you at the Iowa Deer Classic.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see you. And thank you once again for having us on the podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.